I'm going to share with you in a moment some stats that might kind of make you feel a little bit disheartened. No need to be, but in any event, what can you do to curb the tide of the insanity that we see around us? Is that you can invite people to meet the Savior. And maybe if you don't know how to do that, at the very least, you can invite them to church. I mean, we love a church. We love a church that's full, right? I mean, sometimes when you don't see the church full, you think, what's wrong? What's going on here? Listen, you're free to invite some people. In fact, I ask you to invite some people. That way we can, God loves a full church, right? And in fact, he taught us a parable, compel them to come in that my house might be full. So that's a good thing. I know that right now you're kind of feeling a little uncomfortable because I'm putting this on you, but it's really part of our responsibility as believers that are part of a local church community called Pure Heart. So I encourage you to do that. Also, just a couple announcements that I forgot to announce. When you walk out today, I want you to take for yourself a double portion of the bread and the pastries that we have back there. We got an extra big load of big donation this morning from Publix, lots of breads and sweets and pastries. And tomorrow the church is closed, which basically means that by Tuesday, some of that stuff may not be any good. So if you see some things that you like and you want to share, listen, what a great evangelistic tool to go to your friend or your neighbor or your family member, say, my church gives you this great big loaf of sourdough bread. We want you to come next week. That's a great way to make inroads, and so we hope you do that. And I'm very glad to have my daughter with us today this weekend. She's visiting from Orlando. She is officially a nurse. I'm not sure you can diagnose. She can diagnose any of your maladies, so you probably don't ask. But anyway, we're glad to have her with us and returning back tomorrow. Now, I think Henry, I think we have that video ready. It's a little 5-minute clip from YouTube that kind of is going to segue to introduce our series today. It comes from a secular angle, but I think that you'll get a lot out of it. So when you're ready to play that, go right ahead.
No document.
Thank you for that. Hopefully that added a little bit of insight into what we're going to be talking about. No doubt you and I both have looked around, and we've come to the realization that the values and the morals that we've seen are quickly eroding around us. It seems over the last 10 years, I would say, especially over the 10 years, that the things that we used to hold in high regard and that we would highly esteem, nowadays that's being kind of flipped on its ear, and things that we thought were dramatically, drastically important, a lot of members of society nowadays don't share that opinion, right? And so they're were commonly accepted practices of decency are no longer common. It seems that today, the more profane you are, the more airtime you get, right? The more vulgar, the more rude that you become, the more indecent you become, the more you are elevated to a position of role model, right? You're exercising free speech. And the more that you think about these things, how things have kind of in a way gotten out of hand, it seems like these things are pushing out the noble and the good and the righteous. And as a result, families are changing. Family dynamics today are dramatically different than they were 20 years ago. Okay, ethics are changing. Morality is changing. Our basic understanding of what's right and wrong is being challenged every day. We're seeing the envelope pushed concerning things that are righteous, things that are correct versus things that are incorrect. And with that, family values are changing. Because the family is only as strong as the individuals, but if the individuals are confused about what's right or what's wrong, then families have no chance. right? And so as a result, people are concerned. I believe that, you know, you guys here today, you're probably concerned and maybe even alarmed and perhaps even angry because you see this moral decay taking place in front of you, and yet you feel helpless to do anything about it. Now, you may not be able to do anything about it individually overnight, but you can do something about it in your own life. You could make a decision that I'm going to return to God's way of viewing things. I'm going to return to God's way of doing things. See, the more we begin to espouse family values, the better our families will be, the better our churches will be, the better our society will be. Listen, make no mistake, we are in a cultural war. Okay, and we are in an ethics war. But behind the cultural war, there's a real spiritual war taking place. Now, we can go in so many different directions with today's theme, and so I'm trying to resist going into different, you know, rabbit holes and rabbit trails. But listen for a moment, because every day we're hearing thoughts that challenge our basic ideologies, that challenge our philosophies, and the wars that we're talking about—the spiritual war, the cultural war, the ethics war. This is a war. This is a war for the hearts and the souls of our kids, because this is what we're going to reproduce. So if we, as the adults, don't get this straight, then the next generation has no chance. So we need to, in a way, make a commitment saying, I'm going to be a part of stopping this barrage of evil and indecency that's little by little been creeping into our society, into our mainstream lives over the years. Now it crept in little by little, and we'll get rid of it little by little. But we only begin to get rid of it as we make a commitment to living out God's truth for our lives, right? You may feel powerless, but you're really not powerless, right? As you personally, as we personally commit to doing things God's way or observing the 10 family values that God has outlined for us, we'll begin to see little changes. You may not be called to change the family next door, but you're called to change yourself. As you change yourself, your family changes, and that influence spreads. Amen. And that influence affects other people, right? And so as we talk about family value, let me just give you a basic definition. This came from the Webster Collegiate Dictionary, and I'm going to give you a little bit of information today that hopefully will set the groundwork for the coming weeks. But according to Webster, family values are standards, ethics, morals, principles, and beliefs, especially of a traditional or conservative kind, which are held to promote the sound functioning of the family and to strengthen the fabric of society. Bottom line, we need family values to strengthen the world in which we live in. Right? Now, while most families recognize that they need values, okay, in fact, there was a poll done recently where 80% of Americans feel that the U.S. is in a moral crisis right now. Okay? While most families recognize that they need values, not every family knows where they can go to get those values. Right? Few people can articulate where am I going to get these values? What values? Whose values? Like the video says. So who are you, Moses, to tell me what to do and how, what to obey and what not to obey? And so you have to ask yourself, where are you getting your values from? Where do most people get their values from? It has to be the family. Now, yeah, there are some external forces that are always vying for our opinion, and you have to make a decision. Where are you going to develop your values from? Is it going to be TV? Is it going to be TV sitcoms? Is it going to be Seinfeld, Family Guy, Two and a Half Men, Big Bang Theory? Okay, where are you going to get your values from? Grey's Anatomy? Yet a lot of people, this is where they develop their values based on this programming. What entertainer are you going to base your values on? The values of Katy Perry? Lady Gaga, Drake, Jay-Z, Oprah. Calm down over there. I've had a falling out with Oprah. Over the years, it's been coming, and now this last couple of weeks is just, I'm done. So, but you have to ask yourself, and we're not going to talk about Oprah now, but you have to ask yourself, where are you getting your values from? Talk shows, entertainment shows, reality shows. Everybody wants family values, right? Everybody says we need family values, but where do we get them from? Right? Bill Bennett said something I thought was very interesting. He says, today it's politically correct to believe in family values, but it's not politically correct to get specific about them. So in other words, we want, yeah, family values. We all need family values, but abortion is murder. Don't tell me what you think. Right? So we want to kind of espouse this idea that's out there, but we don't really want to get specific. But listen, 3,500 years ago, God got very specific. He got very specific on Mount Sinai, where he gave Moses those 10 commandments. And we call them 10 commandments. We could call them 10 family values. We could call them 10 values for successful living. Whatever you call them, it goes down to 10. 10 basic principles for living that if we follow them, it will assure us a life that's filled with joy, with success, with security. But if you don't follow them, all you do is you perpetuate chaos and anarchy, as we're going to see temporarily. Now, think about this for a moment, because there have been a lot of organizations, even here in the U.S., a lot of organizations that have tried to get rid of the Ten Commandments. First thing, when a country goes communist, they get rid of what? The idea of God, they get rid of the Bible, so therefore they get rid of the Ten Commandments. Well, we have an organization in the U.S. called the ACLU. American Civil Liberties Union. Sounds like a great name. They don't always do great things. And they've been in a war. They've been in a war against anything that has to do with religion in schools or religion in governments or civil government. And they continually bring lawsuits, okay, against school districts and against civil governments for displaying the Ten Commandments, even though you know in reality the Ten Commandments is a historical item. Right? Even though many of the common laws in this country were based on the Ten Commandments and it has historical validity, okay, they come against these schools and they come against these institutions trying to remove them. Now, it all goes back, really, when you think about it, it all goes back to 1980 in this country. In 1980, there was a landmark case in the Supreme Court, and the Supreme Court ruled that it was unconstitutional to display the Ten Commandments in school. Okay? What was their reasoning? Well, their reasoning was, and I'm going to read you their reasoning in a little bit, but their reasoning was that according to them, it violated the Establishment Clause. Okay, the U.S. Bill of Rights, the First Amendment, has a couple of clauses. One is called the Establishment Clause. And let me just read you with the First Amendment of the Constitution. First Amendment says, Congress shall make no law respecting an establishment, there's the Establishment Clause, an establishment of religion, or prohibiting the free exercise thereof, or abridging the freedom of speech, or of the press, or the right of the people to peaceably to assemble and to petition the government for redress of grievances. So we all understand that the First Amendment guarantees what? Freedom of speech, freedom of the press, freedom of assembly, freedom of religion. Okay, so that freedom, that Establishment Clause, what it really means, okay, is that it forbade Congress, okay, it forbids Congress from promoting one religion over another and restricting someone else's religious practices. That's what that amendment means. So Congress couldn't all of a sudden say, from now on, the religion of the state is going to be Presbyterian or Congregationalist or Pentecostal or Baptist or whatever. They couldn't say that. And so that was the very purpose. And it's the very First Amendment, because that's what That's the order of importance of those Bill of Rights, right? So now what the Supreme Court did in 1980 is that they looked at that Establishment Clause, and what the Establishment Clause did in the First Amendment is that it prevented Congress from favoring one religion over another. But the Supreme Court now in 1980, okay, what they did is that they interpreted that Establishment Clause to mean that Congress is responsible to keep us free from religion rather than for us to exercise freedom of religion. See the difference? There's a big difference, okay? And so they interpreted it wrongly that we should be free from all symbols of religion in all public sectors, particularly the schools, rather than freedom of religion, right? So that was their reasoning for determining that the posting of the Ten Commandments was unconstitutional. So they were asked to write about it. And so they got the Chief Justice back then in 1980, okay, to write about it. And listen to what he wrote. This is the reasoning why, first of all, because it went against the Establishment Clause. Second, he says, because posting of religious texts, this is his words, quote, posting of religious texts on the wall serves no educational function. If the posted copies of the Ten Commandments are to have any effect at all, it will be to induce the school children to read, meditate upon, perhaps to venerate and to obey the commandments. This is not a permissible state objective. End quote. In other words, we can't have the Ten Commandments posted on the walls of our schools because kids might read them. And if they read them, they might think about them. And if they think about them, they may respect them. And if they respect them, they might obey them. What kind of society are we going to have when kids are walking around obeying the Ten Commandments? That was their reasoning, right? So listen to what it says in Proverbs. Proverbs 14:34 says, righteousness exalts a nation, but sin is a reproach to any people. So you see, the rising and the falling of this nation is very much contingent on its call and its commitment to righteousness and the Ten Commandments, or the lack thereof. Right? So when we remove the Ten Commandments, what we've done is that we've removed, in essence, what defines right or wrong. When we remove the Ten Commandments, we've removed what establishes proper ethics and proper values for our children, right? And in doing so, what have we done? In doing so, what we've done is we've opened the floodgates to all sorts of vices and all sorts of ills and all sorts of perversions. We don't know why. We're wondering, why are kids killing themselves? And we can't really trace it back to the fact that, well, we decided to axe God out of school. Right? The Ten Commandments are good for us individually. They're good for our families. They're good for our society. They're good for our school. They're good for our business. Okay, listen, it's good for our nation because it makes you happier. It makes you healthier. It makes you safer. It makes you more productive. And it adds meaning to your life. Right? Now, I find this interesting that a lot of people will say, yes, I live by the Ten Commandments, but they can only remember about 5 or 6 of them. Don't worry, I'm not going to give you a test. I'm not going to put you on the spot. But a lot of people, so I want us to look at them and just to look at them a little bit in the actual text of where it was written. And it's found in Exodus chapter 20. And we're going to read the first 17 verses. I'm going to read to you from the New Living Translation. It makes it a little bit of a juvenile translation, but it helps us with clarity and with understanding. And I want you to look at it for a moment. It says, "Then the Lord gave the people all these instructions." Understand that. That's what Dennis Prager of Prager University was saying. He's saying, you need to understand that it was God that gave the commandments. If it wasn't God, then we're in trouble. Because then opinions can change and shift. It says, verse 2, he says, here's commandment number 1. It says, I am the Lord your God who rescued you from the land of Egypt, the place of your slavery. You must have no other God but me. Commandment number 2. Okay, verse 4. You must not make for yourself an idol of any kind or an image of anything in the heavens or on earth or in the earth. You must not bow down. Now, here's the reason. What is he saying? Don't make an image of anything for the purpose of worshiping. That's clarified in verse 5. So it's not that you can't draw an image of, have an image of, a tiger or a bear or something for educational purposes. You just must not have that image for religious purposes, purposes of worship, right? He's clarifying that in verse 5. He says, you must not bow down to them or worship them, for I, the Lord your God, am a jealous God who will not tolerate your affection for any other gods. I lay the sins of the parents upon their children. The entire family is affected, even the children in the third and the fourth generation of those who reject me. But I lavish unfailing love for 1,000 generations. God's love far exceeds God's wrath. Right? To thousands of generations of those who love and those who love me and obey my commandments, my commands. Okay, so the second command, no idols. Third command, don't misuse the name of the Lord. You must not misuse the name of the Lord your God. The Lord will not let you go unpunished if you misuse his name. Okay, third commandment, respect the name. Respect the name. We'll elaborate on these as the weeks come, because I'm tempted to just kind of, stop. Verse 8, fourth commandment. Remember to observe the Sabbath day by keeping it holy. You have 6 days each week for your ordinary work, but on the seventh day is a Sabbath day of rest dedicated to the Lord your God. On that day, no one in your household may do any work. This includes you, your sons and daughters, your male and female servants, your livestock, and any foreigners living among you. For in the 6 days the Lord made the heavens, the earth, the sea, and everything in them. But on the seventh day he rested. This is why the Lord blessed the Sabbath day and set it apart as holy. Fifth commandment, verse 12. It says, honor your father and mother. And all the parents said, then you will have a long, full life in the land of the Lord your God is giving you, right? Sixth commandment, you must not murder. Seventh commandment, you must not commit adultery. Eighth commandment, verse 15, you must not steal. Ninth commandment, verse 16, you must not testify falsely against your neighbor. Tenth commandment, verse 17, you must not covet your neighbor's house. You must not covet your neighbor's wife, male or female servant, ox or donkey, or anything else that belongs to your neighbor. So these are 10 commandments, 10 family values that will help us to maintain order, maintain decency, and prosper within any society that the family is committed to observing them. More than ever, we need the 10 commandments. Right? So today I want to give you just a couple of points, just laying the groundwork for these on why you and I, why we need the Ten Commandments. Okay, the first reason why we need the Ten Commandments is that the Ten Commandments are God's authoritative rule. Professor Prager already kind of put that into context about that they're not laws written by man, but they were given by God, okay? And they were part of a holy covenant between God and his people. And in the covenant, God promises his people something in exchange for their worship. You worship me exclusively, and this is what you're going to get. You're going to prosper, you're going to have health, you're going to have land, you're going to have a great inheritance, and all the blessings that come associated with the worship of God. God says, I'm entering into a covenant with you. You'll be blessed, but you got to keep me first, right? And so, so think about this because the Ten Commandments are laws. If you have read the first 5 books of the Bible, in fact, the second, from the second, third, fourth, and fifth book, Exodus, Leviticus, Numbers, and Deuteronomy. If you've read those four books, you realize, man, there are law after law after laws that are there, right? Now, all those laws can be separated into three different types of laws, and they're outlined in what the Jewish believers or our Jewish friends refer to as the Torah. Right? And so there are three types of laws contained within those four books. The first type of law are civil laws. Those are laws that God gave that govern the affairs of their society, of their nation, okay, of their community. They dealt with legal disputes, with domestic disputes, with disputes about land and land boundaries and what happens when I'm accidentally injured and you know, how do you treat this kind of person and immigration. Everything is in there. Everything that deals with the what is civil affairs, they were civil laws. First category. Second category were ceremonial laws. Laws that dealt with cleanliness, laws that dealt with the sacrificial system. What kind of animal could you bring for sacrifice? What animal couldn't you bring? What day can you bring it? These were laws that had to do with observing the proper religious ritual, laws that govern how to operate the tabernacle, how to make the different artifacts that were within the tabernacle. Those are ceremonial laws. There is a lot of those laws as well. But then you had a third category of laws, and those were moral laws. Moral laws apply to all people at all times in all places. Those moral laws that God gave apply to us today. The Ten Commandments, okay, the Ten Commandments are a set of moral laws that God says, I want you to observe them, okay, all the time. They apply to all of you. Okay, at all times and at all places, right? Now, understand something. Let me just give you a quick disclaimer, and we're going to visit this at the very end. But the disclaimer here is that you don't observe the Ten Commandments. You will never be saved by observing the Ten Commandments. It'll make your family better. It'll make your church better. It'll make society better, but it won't save you. Right? That's the reason why Jesus came to die. He came because he saw that we were inept. We were unable to keep even 10. Some of you look at the list and say, broke that one, scratched that one off, X that one. And you have failed almost every single one. Don't raise your hands. You have failed almost every single one. And some of you will say, I've failed every single one multiple times. Okay, over and over and over again. That's why Jesus came. See, our salvation is not contingent on how good we are at observing the Ten Commandments. Okay, our salvation is contingent on God's grace, on God's forgiveness. Okay, the fact that Jesus, he paid the price. So every judgment that I should have received because I didn't obey the Ten Commandments, Jesus took upon himself. So he paid my debt for me. He paid my price. He paid the price for me. He paid the fine for me, right? So understand that I'm not saying you follow the Ten Commandments and it's going to help you get one inch closer to heaven. Not one inch closer to heaven will you get by observing these Ten Commandments. Because salvation is only by grace. Through faith. It is a gift. And we thank God for that gift. It's the gift that comes to us through Jesus Christ. However, and I know you understand this. However, there is a place for the Ten Commandments in our everyday lives. We don't look to them. We don't observe them to say, look how better I am than you. Okay? But we observe them. Why? Because God in his wisdom gave them to us for our benefit and for our protection. Right? And we'll talk about that in a moment. But they were just the outlines I'm giving you here on the different laws that they were giving. And so think about the Ten Commandments for a reason, for a moment, that they were been the most enduring of all the codes that you could think of all the ancient codes. They are unequaled. Our moral laws, the moral laws in this country, okay, all stem from the Ten Basic Commands. I don't know if you know this, but the two most important documents in the history of this nation are the Declaration of Independence, right? And also the Bill of Rights, the U.S. Constitution, right? The two most important documents. Now, what you may not know is that the framers of the Declaration of Independence and the framers of the Constitution, what you may not know is that they were heavily influenced by the writings of a man over in England named Sir William Blackstone. If you've ever studied law, no doubt you will hear the commentary of Blackstone. Blackstone was a highly respected jurist and professor at Oxford University. And he wrote countless commentaries. Well, what happened is that the colonists borrowed from all, and even though he was against the separation of the U.S. from Britain, okay, it was his writings that caused the U.S. to break away from Britain. But, and so a lot of the laws that we have in the land are directly attributed to the commentaries and to the writings of William Blackstone. Now think of what a couple of things that William Blackstone said. Blackstone said once, he says, there is no enactment, I quote, no enactment of man can be considered law unless it conforms to the law of God, unquote. The laws are not valid unless those laws come from God. Right? And so at the very heart of common law, Blackstone believed that there should be one very important component to all laws, the Ten Commandments. And Blackstone's career was deeply rooted in his Christian faith. Right? His statement, I'm going to give you another statement. Blackstone's statement says, man must necessarily be subject to the laws of his creator, for he is entirely a dependent being. And consequently, as man depends absolutely upon his maker for everything, it is necessary that he should in all points conform to his master's will. End quote. So the laws that we have that establish our Constitution, our Declaration of Independence, the common laws of this land, all come from a guy named Blackstone. And Blackstone gets all his laws where? From the book. Right? From his fear of God, from his understanding that we've been granted certain unalienable rights that are given to us not by man, but by our divine creator. So we need the Ten Commandments because they are God's authoritative rule. You need to believe that. Second reason we need the Ten Commandments is because the Ten Commandments show us how God wants to be loved. Now we've said this before that you know, worship is synonymous with love. When you worship God, you're showing God that you love him. Right? So worship, that takes it far beyond the context of singing songs and raising hands and clapping out loud and raising your voice. Right? Because true worship, here's what Jesus said. This is love for God, to obey his commands. Okay, this is John saying it, 1 John 5:3. So when God gave us the commands, he's basically saying, this is the way I want you to show me that you love me. How does mom and dad show you that they love you? They prepare your favorite dish. After school, oh man, you had a rough day. Let's stop by a Dairy Queen and fix you up a nice sundae. What do those actions mean to a child? They mean mom and dad care for me, right? And maybe you do that in your marriage. Maybe you fix your husband his favorite chicken, rice, and corn, you know, every now and then. Maybe you think, and what do those actions demonstrate? I love you. This is the way that a spouse, that a wife, or that a, you know, shows her husband that she loves him. I fixed this for you. I prepared that for you. I cleaned this for you. And those are demonstrations of love. Here's what God's saying. You want to show me that you love me? Here's how you can demonstrate it. Observe the commandments. Look at what Jesus said. He says, whoever has my commandments and obeys them, he is the one who loves me. So the commandments really are God's love language. So that means that you could come to church and not sing not one song, not raise your hands, not raise your voice, but you can live in accordance to the Ten Commandments, and you are a better worshiper than someone that sang and raised their hands, okay, and clapped, but yet they didn't care one iota about observing any of the commandments. Who's the true worshiper? The true worshiper is the one that loves God by observing what God wants us to observe, right? Now, when you understand the commandments, you also get a little glimpse into the holiness of God, into what makes God different, into his nature. One day they asked Jesus these questions. They said, Lord, this question, as you say, what is the greatest commandment? Matthew 22 is a reference, verse 37. And you guys know, some of you guys already know the answer. He said to them, you shall love the Lord your God with all your heart, with all your soul, with all your heart, and with all your mind. He says, this is the first and the greatest commandment. But he didn't stop there. Why? Because you can't separate number one from number two. So he kept right on going. He says, and the second one is like it. You shall love your neighbor as yourself. On these two commandments depend all the law and the prophets. Everything written in the Torah and outside the Torah. All of it hinges on your love for God and your love for fellow man. Now, isn't this interesting? Because historically, we know if you research the Ten Commandments, you realize that when Moses came down from Sinai, he came down with two tablets, right? On the first tablet dealt with our horizontal relationship. They all deal with how do we relate to God? No other gods, no idols. Okay, don't use God's name in vain. And then you have the crossover one about honoring, mom and dad, honoring father and mother. But then the second tablet dealt with horizontal relationships. Okay, the one, how do we deal with our fellow man? And here's what Jesus is saying. So the way that Jesus broke it down, he broke it down according to the two tablets. Right? The first command, love God with all your heart. The second command is similar to it. He says, you got to love your neighbor as you love yourself. How do you treat people? It all comes down to respect. First tablet, I got to respect God. Second tablet, I got to respect my fellow man. Right? So that's another reason why we need the Ten Commandments. Here's a third reason. Third reason we need the Ten Commandments is because the Ten Commandments hold us accountable to a set of divine standards. When we don't obey these, we elaborated on it through the video, so I'm not going to belabor the point, but just suffice it to say that when society eliminates the Ten Commandments, we sink into chaos and anarchy. Right? 40 years ago, 93% of people believed in Judeo-Christian values. Today, it's less than 50%. So what happened 40 years ago? You had that landmark case saying, we don't want God as part of our educational system. So we're educating children, okay, with an understanding that God doesn't really matter. Right? There's 22 million young people today in this country between the ages of 13 and 18, and 82% of them don't believe that moral absolutes exist. Why? Because that's what we've been feeding them in public schools. Okay, only 17% of the population believe in absolute truth. 17%. Everybody else believes, yeah, I believe in some truth, but I believe the truth can be negotiated depending on the circumstances, right? So think about this for a moment, because what the Ten Commandments do is they challenge our moral independence. People who resist the Ten Commandments, they're resisting God himself. They've become their own gods. They're saying, okay, I don't like commandment number 4. I don't like commandment number 8. Okay, we're going to get rid of them. Okay, I think it was Ted Turner that decided one day we should just get rid of the one on adultery. Okay, so listen, why don't you just pick and choose? What are you actually doing? When you eliminate the commandments, you're basically saying, I'm placing myself above God, and I'm making myself a god. Hence, you're violating the very first command. What sometimes we forget to understand is that the Ten Commandments benefit us as a society. That's the fourth point. See, God gave us the commandments not to impede or cramp our style, right? But God gave us the commandments not just so we could identify with him, but for those commandments to be a source of blessing and good and welfare and well-being, right? You know, child psychologists, not too many of them that disagree with this, most of them would agree that children need boundaries because boundaries create security. right? Whereas permissiveness creates insecurity because I don't know. Because I'm doing something, but my conscience is telling me something else, right? So what does that mean? That means that we, as children, even from very young age, we need rules, and we need rules that transcend our basic human logic and human reasoning. See, we need permission, but we also need prohibition, right? Children need to hear no. No is not always a negative thing. Because with that no, you establish boundaries. So, you're driving along a mountain pass. And in that mountain pass, you see a sign. And the sign says danger, or it says caution, falling rocks. You're going to get upset with that sign? These stinking government people, all they want to do is cramp my style. I don't want to hear about no stinking rocks. No, you don't get upset. You drive a little more cautious because you realize, okay, there's an area where it's prone to rock slides or whatever. So you're a little more cautious. You're appreciative of the fact that there may be a prohibition in there. Right? When you're driving another mountain pass, you appreciate the fact that there's a fence, there's a guardrail. That gives you a sense of security when there's no guardrail. It's like, let me slow down because I don't know if this curve is really, you know, as severe as I think it is or isn't. Because boundaries are absolutely necessary because they benefit us. They help us. The Ten Commandments in the same way. What do? They prosper us. They bless us. Okay? They lead us to success. Right? Just like a society could never survive, okay, without civil laws, a nation could never survive without moral laws. Imagine for a moment, imagine what would society look like if every member decided for themselves what was right and what was wrong. Or you might think it's a utopia of absolute freedom, but freedom, yes, but freedom has a price, right? So, if everybody decided for themselves, then street signs wouldn't mean what street signs mean. Red would mean stop if I want. If I don't want, take it. Right? So there'd be no rules to govern your business. There'd be no rules for human interaction. There'd be no basic rules for observing different contracts. Okay? So what would happen? There would be widespread anarchy. There'd be theft, there'd be murder, there'd be adultery. No one could say it's right or what's wrong because everyone's doing what they thought or what they esteemed to be right in their own eyes. Think about it for a moment, because the crowd that says, don't impose your morality on me, in essence is asking for an anarchy. They're asking for lawlessness. They're asking for everyone to do their own thing, but they're not going to like it if everybody did their own thing, because society will be reduced to a brutal, primitive society. So what has a godless philosophy that we're talking about, what has it produced? Think about it in our own generation. What has it produced? Well, it's produced out of wedlock births in epidemic proportions. Substance abuse. Sexually transmitted diseases. Cohabitation, gang violence, divorce on demand, abortion on demand, the devaluation of human life. Okay, so what does it produce? For the most part, it produces a society that is free from the fear of God, an atheistic society, that they might say they believe in God, but they don't act that way. So they become practical atheists, right? A godless society without values, without purpose, without meaning, a society. So we wonder, why are kids killing themselves? We're teaching them to kill themselves. We're teaching them that human life doesn't matter, and it all depends on the context of where that life is. Because if the life is within the womb of the mother, then it's okay. It's not afforded any protection. So then why are we surprised when they're killing themselves in Chicago? They're basically borrowing what we've taught them all through the years, that God is not important, that the commandments are not important, that killing is not really all that important, that human life is not all that important. So we need to return to the Ten Commandments, right? The Ten Commandments, really, when you think about it, it gives meaning to life. Because if I basically do what I want without any restriction, without any boundaries placed on me, okay, so what if I cheat? So what if I steal? So what if I hate? So what if I disobey? So what if I commit adultery? So what if I gossip? So what? So what? So what? So what? If I live my life that way, eventually I'm going to come to the conclusion that life is absurd and has no meaning. So in a way, the Ten Commandments add meaning. Those borders, those boundaries are important, right? Because they're necessary to give life meaning. And what we need is a set of standards that don't erode, standards that are unchangeable, like man's standards are always changeable. That's why we can be confident in the commandments that God gave to Moses to give to the people. We can be confident because it was God that gave them to us. And while they won't get you to heaven, they will change you individually. They will change us together as a group. As you apply them to your life will be changed. As you apply them to your life, your children will be changed. Okay? As they apply them to our life, our society, our churches will be changed. Right? Just look at them again in close. God says, these are the 10 family values I want you to espouse. Number one, you shall have no other gods before me. Number two, you shall not make an idol of anything. Number three, respect the name. Number four, remember the Sabbath. Number five, honor your mom and your dad. Number six, do not murder. Number seven, do not commit adultery. Number eight, do not steal. Number nine, do not give false testimony. And number 10, do not covet. Even though there's quite a few do nots, I think all of us would agree, those do nots are good. The Ten Commandments are good. They're good for you. They're good for me. They're good for society. They're good for my church. They make me healthier and happier and safer and more successful. Of all the family values that people desire and that everybody wants family values, I say we return to the Ten Commandments. We return to the Ten Commandments and we'll see what God will do in our society. Let me ask you all to stand with me.